407, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Well, hello, gentlemen. It is another episode of Flight Safety Detectives. It is one of those days where I know that we are all, you know, points yonder, and we are finally together once again to talk about an interesting ground collision that recently took place and unfortunately involved another Endeavor Air aircraft. And Todd, I think you were doing the statistical analysis and determined that this is the third event involving Endeavor Air in, what, about a year or so?
That's correct. The three are the collision that happened in September in LaGuardia, another ground collision that happened between an Endeavor Mitsubishi CRJ-9, I believe it, and an A350 in Atlanta, and involved a Delta airliner, the A350. And the big one, or at least the one that got the most press coverage, the crash in Toronto on landing, where, fortunately, nobody got seriously injured or killed, and that was a good thing. And One of the questions we had was, is there a connection? We'll get to that momentarily.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we look at it, while Endeavor, you know, at least the one up in Toronto and the other event at LaGuardia were operational in nature. That is, you know, you had aircraft moving. the on-ground collision in LaGuardia involved two airplanes moving in opposite direction that clipped each other when one of them, I think, got into the intersection inadvertently. So when you look at that, yeah, you have to look at operation discipline. You have to look at crew qualifications. We know over the past several years, we've talked about it on this show, that, you know, we got a lot of pilot factories out there. We're churning out pilots. The airlines were at some point desperate for putting a warm body in a seat. And while they may be qualified, they aren't necessarily quality. And so while those accidents may involve that type of investigation, the one we're going to talk about today, involving a Delta A350 that struck the tail of an Endeavor RJ, it's a little different. And why don't you just introduce us to this accident, Todd, and then John and I will chime in and bombard you with questions that you can't answer.
Which is the usual way things go here. Well, this is an event that took place on September 10th, 2024, where there was an Endeavor aircraft that was taxiing to takeoff on a runway. And they were told by ground control to hold short. And they were at the hold, near the hold short line. And according to the photograph, or rather the graphic that those of you watching the video version of this are seeing, they were about 56 feet behind the hold short line. And taxiing behind them from the Endeavor's right was an A350, Delta A350, taxiing for takeoff on the same runway. And in essence, the right wingtip of the A350 sliced into the tail section, some part of the tail section of the Endeavor. And as you can see from another graphic that we're showing on the video, it completely took the vertical stabilizer and horizontal stabilizer off its moorings. It was laying sideways on the fuselage. Point of fact, this airplane was repaired and it's now flying again. It looked pretty serious, but there was only one minor injury inside of the Endeavor. Now, one of the things, a question, let me back up a little bit. This is a preliminary report. It does not have the background that we would get in a full report, so we don't have a public docket to work with. So all we have is the preliminary report, which does not go into things such as what was the experiences of the pilot 72 hours before the accident, what were the other things that might have been going on either with the aircraft, with the flight crews, or the airport that might have figured into this. But
Well, when we look at this, John, a number of things come to mind. One, the Endeavor crew, they were told to hold short of the runway, which, according to the prelim, indicates that what the captain at least has said was that she pulled up to within 50 feet of the hold short line, set the brakes, and was waiting for additional information. And that the A350 apparently was given a taxi instruction to taxi behind the RJ. Now, the big concern here for the A350 crew is, one, can you see the wingtip from the cockpit of the A350? And doing research, it's evident that you can't. So, with that being said, now you have to look at, okay, what else? Well, this airplane happens to be equipped with external cameras, similar to the A380. And is that a required procedure to look at those cameras to ensure obstruction or obstacle clearance by the flight crew? That's one of the first questions I have. And then, of course, because they're taxiing, they are preparing for takeoff. Were one or both pilots slightly or completely heads down, even momentarily, running a checklist, doing final checks before they are getting ready to take off, and not monitoring at least obstruction clearance as they were continuing to taxi. These are the kinds of questions that I hope will be answered in the full report. But John, again, when you look at it, you start looking at, well, who's really responsible? The female captain on the Endeavor, not that she's female, but it just so happens she's female. But the fact that the captain had, pulled up to within 50 feet of the hold short line and then parked the aircraft there, everything appears to be at least copacetic and normal for that particular operation.
there is something in the preliminary report that caught my couple things. First, I don't believe they mentioned the genders of anyone in the A350 or of the first officer in the CRJ. So, NTSB, hey, if you're going to do it for one, do it for everybody so nobody can point fingers. But a key phrase here, key paragraph, which I'm putting on the screen, after the A350 turned on the taxiway echo, ground control instructed the flight crew to have the airplane follow the CRJ on taxiway echo and switch to the tower frequency. As the A350 continued to taxi on taxiway echo, the flight crew observed the navigational alert message, NAVGNSS-2, on ECAM. The first officer informed the tower they would need to stop to coordinate with maintenance before departure. Now, let's stop for a second. This A350 is going down the taxiway. Captain is sitting on the left side. Captain is handling the tiller and is, was stated earlier, looking straight and to the left to make sure they avoided oncoming traffic on the left side of the A350. First officer sits on the right side of the A350. Presumably, the first officer will be responsible for looking out the window, making sure they don't run into anything. What role did dealing with this ECAM message and talking to ground control have to do with the pilot's attention to detail? Again, this is the preliminary report, does not mention those details, but I would be looking for that in the final report.
Yeah, and like I said, did one or both of those guys have their heads down? Well, you just gave us a reason for the FO to have his head down, or she have her head down. We don't know their gender, but the FO having their head down to address that ECAM message, and given the fact that it was the right wing that struck the tail of the RJ, did that momentary distraction take away from the FO monitoring as they were continuing to taxi and hope, behind the RJ. John, I mean, from your perspective, in all the jump seats we've all ridden, we've seen things that, kind of catch your attention, and again, it gets down to what's the operational discipline and the policies and procedures.
Right. And it's not stated whether they could use that camera in taxi, and they in the description of the cameras they talk about in and around the gate areas, but they don't talk about taxiing, which it could be a very useful tool. And the other thing that caught my eye is these circumstances here can affect a lot of other people. Mechanics move airplanes and other people move airplanes every single day, depending on the location and the company policy. Typically, in the stations with I've had experience with mechanics, we've had a number of mechanics violated for that whole shot line because they came right up to it, and the nose may have been over it, and they get cited for it. And so there's a lot of lessons in here for everybody that moves airplanes.
Because these, I mean, the reason, you have to be at a specific place behind the line, not on the line, but behind the line, is for those specified clearances, especially when you have big airplanes with long wings. And so, you have to be, following that procedure. Now, she stopped 50 feet short, the Endeavor captain stopped 50 feet short of the hold short line. Well, that's not a bad thing, and it's not a wrong thing, because there is no minimum distance that you are required to stop at behind the hold short line. And in this case, pulling up, she could see the hold short line. She stopped the aircraft, she parked it there. Now, whether or not there was sufficient distance on that taxiway, because that particular taxiway is a short taxi, very short taxiway, especially for a large airplane. Because I suspect that if you were to have changed places, and that is put the A350 in the position of the RJ and have the RJ taxi, while yes, the RJ sits lower and that kind of stuff, all things being equal, you may still have a collision, because that is a very short coupled taxiway that links the main taxiway to the runway. You can see that in the aerial photograph, that that isn't a very long taxiway.
Well, let me take this opportunity to say a little something here that our new top-level flight safety detectives YouTube sponsor, Perry Dhanashyari, is looking at this right now. Thank you for being a supporter, and thank you for watching the show. And please, if you like what we're doing here, whether you're Perry or someone else, and you want to say something about what we're talking about, leave us a message either by email or on the YouTube channel.
Hello, aviation enthusiasts, safety professionals, and curious minds. Welcome to Flight Safety Detectives. We are thrilled that you dropped by. Here, we dive deep into the world of aviation safety. From incident investigations and technical analysis to lessons learned and what they mean for safer skies. As a member of our channel, you get exclusive member-only perks, first access to new episodes, live stream discussions, and Q&A sessions. We are a community of fellow safety detectives who love aviation as much as you do. If you're passionate about aviation or just curious about how things work, we'd love to have you on board. Hit join, ring the bell to be notified, and jump into the discussions in the comments. Strap in, because together we're going to explore aviation safety like never before.
And now back to our show.
And John, you know, we've seen these issues come up at LaGuardia as well, because, you know, LaGuardia wasn't built for big, big airplanes. It was built for smaller transport category airplanes. And we've had issues where we've had these on-ground collisions because of the short coupled distances of some of those taxiways.
It's not just LaGuardia. Boston Logan, same issue on certain areas of the airport. Not all, because when they made the parallel runway, they gave it more spacing. But there's a section of the airport that's been around for a long time, and they have the same clearance problems there.
So
poles and other buildings, even.
So that begs the question: is there any kind of air traffic control responsibility on the ground controller to understand that kind of spacing, given the fact that we have the A350 with a long wingspan, and you got an airplane that's, you know, holding short on a short taxiway? Is that something that needs to be explored? That's number one. And number two, as Todd said, weren't they changing frequencies as well from ground to tower?
When the first officer saw the ECAM message come out, he informed the tower they would need to stop to coordinate with maintenance before departure. Now, whether or not they coordinate with maintenance while they were still rolling, or they're going to do so when they stopped, they didn't say so in this, but in this preliminary. But again, when the final report comes out, I'd like to see what the timeline was for what the first officer was doing and who the first officer was coordinating with on the radio during this critical time.
And again, we can see from the aerial photo that if the A350 had to maneuver around the RJ, if they had recognized that they didn't have sufficient clearance, they were at a part of the taxiway that was kind of an intersection that would have enabled them to at least divert slightly left to provide them more clearance on the right wing from the RJ.
Yeah, but there was another airplane coming there.
Yeah.
So I would say the 350 had an obligation to stop until everything was clear and then proceed.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where the board goes with this, to see who had the responsibility for what. You know, it's hard to fault the Endeavor crew, given the fact that they were given a hold short. They stopped the airplane. They parked the airplane and were waiting further instructions. And they didn't breach the hold short line. And there is no minimum for how close you have to be to the hold short line when you come to a stop. So
I'd like to point out another subtlety that I just realized looking at both the graphic and the narrative. The crew of the A350, the captain stated that he was looking to avoid aircraft coming off of Taxiway Victor. And if you look at the graphic, let's say the A350 is going from right to left, for those of you who are on the audio version of this. And Taxiway Victor sort of like loops around from toward the end of runway 8 right and goes back toward where the A350 was coming. In other words, if the captain was diverting his or her attention to Taxiway Victor, they're actually diverting their attention, his or her attention, past where the Endeavor was to a place further down the line.
So, and wasn't that slightly left?
And slightly left as well.
So that's really taken their field of view away from the right side and really focusing that attention, at least for the captain, on the left side. And then you have the possibility of the first officer with his head down or their head down to address the ECAM message and talk on the radio. It's going to be very interesting to see, and I hope that the NTSB will get the internal information, because you know that everybody's filed an ASAP report, but they'll also have filed, or I believe they should have filed, at least a NASA report, which could provide some additional details that don't always appear in an NTSB report.
If we looked at this event in Atlanta, not because of the event in Atlanta, but the event that happened more recently in LaGuardia, And I was thinking, wow, we have these three events within just over a year, Toronto, LaGuardia, and Atlanta, that were involving Endeavor. Is there some sort of coincidence, or is there some sort of systemic issue going on? Well, as we look at this event in Atlanta, it's clearly different from the event in LaGuardia, which we can go into in greater detail. And of course, the one in Toronto was a landing event and only involved one aircraft. So if it was, for example, training issues, there would be training for essentially three different kinds of situations. In this Atlantic case, the training issue I would see is not with the Endeavor, but as you pointed out, with the A350, because they were doing things and being distracted in ways that made it less likely that they could keep separation from that Endeavor.
What time of day was it?
I believe it was at 10:07 a.m., 11.5 miles visibility, light and winds.
So you got no excuse that it was a night operation and you couldn't really judge distance. So, I mean, these are the kind of, elements and factors that the board needs to look at in determining not only, causes and contributing factors. But what's the learning lessons here? What are the recommendations that will come out of this event? And I've always preached it that, no matter what is investigated, there is always a lesson to be learned. And I support the fact that there's always, a basis for a safety recommendation of some sort.
Yeah, I'm looking at this from the point of view of mechanics to taxi, and there's a
Yeah.
lot of lessons in here for mechanics that move airplanes.
And this would include, John, not only somebody, a mechanic that's actually powered the aircraft up and is taxiing it from the cockpit, but also tugging an airplane down a taxiway. And because you don't have wing walkers out there, as they're moving the airplane down a taxiway. So you're going to have to. And do they train the mechanics that, hey, look, you got a long wing out there, and especially in turns and that kind of stuff, the wing pervert, tends to grow. It swings out. I mean, do they get that kind of training? And how would a mechanic who is now in the center of the aircraft, below the nose of the aircraft, determine whether or not they're going to have wingtip clearance if they were tugging that aircraft down that same taxiway.
I just had
Well,
a thought.
there's a quandary in there as well, Greg. All right, so in certain airports, and I worked on them, that are rather congested, they don't want you tugging airplanes. They want you taxiing airplanes.
Okay.
All right, so now you got a guy in the cockpit, and you might not do it that often, right? And there's hotspots on the airport. All the years I was at the working for the airlines, I never got a briefing where the hotspots were in the airport for, where there's signage problems or whatever the problem is. I mean, there's signs that you can see in the flight ready rooms that you don't see in the maintenance. We never get them. And then we find out that we violated something because everybody knew that you didn't do whatever it is you just did, and you got violated. So there's a lot of lessons in here for others that move airplanes.
Well, we should take a note of this type of accident and, keep it in the come back and talk about it file when the final report comes out to see how inclusive and thorough and methodical the board dug into these issues.
One thought before you leave to the LaGuardia accident. There's all kinds of flight simulators out there, even for your basic desktop computer, X-Plane, Microsoft Flight Simulator, for flying an airplane. Is there anything like that out there for taxiing an airplane that is made for maintenance people and other people who taxi airplanes on airports, just to get used to the mechanics and the difficulties of doing that?
Not that I know of.
Well, the question is, should they throw the mechanics who are qualified to taxi those aircraft in a simulator?
Yeah, you can't get it. The simulators are running 24/7. You can't get enough sim time for pilots.
I know. I agree with all that. I'm just saying, would it be beneficial?
I think it certainly would be.
And if need be, you know what? Okay, you clear a block of time on a simulator one day out of the month, and all you do is run mechanic qualified people to go in there, and you don't need to sit there for 4 hours, but at least allow them to get some time on the stick, if you will, to taxi the airplane around, you know, certain airports that definitely have confined areas and hot spots and things like that, just so they have that practical experience.
Okay, all you gamers out there, I have a challenge for you. I know there's a whole community out there of flight simulator enthusiasts who simulate all sorts of scenarios and customize their software to have unique planes, etc., etc. Have any of you out there done something like this? Put together a taxiing simulator that is tailor-made for the kind of things that maintenance people have to go through, and airlines out there. Why don't you throw out a small prize, I don't know, $5,000-$10,000. Whoever has the first system that we think is hot, we give you some money. Just saying.
Whoa, 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 whoa. The first gamer that comes up with that and brings it to us, we will represent them, and our cut will only be 40%. So with that, I will leave you with our second to the last word, Todd.
Well, my second to the last word, once again, is directed at the NTSB. And again, it's a semi-picayune thing. We all noticed that you stated the gender of one of the four pilots involved in this, but you didn't state the gender of the other three. And by the way, what role did the gender play in this? Why would you have to mention that? So my word to you, the NTSB, if you're going to mention gender, mention everybody's. If gender doesn't have jackola to do with what's going on, don't mention anybody. Well, jackola is a proper aviation safety word that's in the NTSB.
I was going to make that clarification that that is a technical term. Yes. And with that, John, I will leave you with our last word.
And as usual, I'll talk about when you're going to go flying. Before you go to the airport, do a little session of pre-planning. And then when you get to the airport, do it again. And if they don't agree, do something. Find out why. When you go out to your airplane, do a very thorough pre-flight. We still find airplanes. I still see them at airports. When I'm there, you still see them that they're not doing a very good pre-flight. So please, pay attention to your pre-flight. That's when you catch those problems. And if you feel like you need a refresher or a little help, find a mechanic that works on the airplane, because mechanics have a different eye, a different way of looking at the airplane, and they'll certainly help you look at the critical pieces to the airplane. And after you get in the air, well, now in this case, I think maybe I'll be adding, when you're taxiing out, pay attention.
Yeah.
Your wingtips.
Yep.
You know, I have a long list of airplanes that taxi into the fuel farm and either hit the fence or hit the pumps. And I just shake my head when I see those. It just, I mean, really.
I've done three accidents involving long wing business aviation jets that, as they were making a turn off the ramp being marshaled, they've taken out light posts and fence posts with the wingtip because the marshalers didn't understand that that wing grows and the pilots can't see that wing back there. So that's a good point, John, to add to your closing remarks.
Yep. And then after you get near, put the head on a swivel, because we still have mid-airs, unfortunately. And with a lot of students, I'm not blaming the student pilots, but there's a lot of student pilots that get themselves a little messed up on where they are and what they're doing. And you don't want to be close to them. You want to let them have an enjoyable flight, and you just don't want to be involved with any mishaps. So yeah. Please, please fly safely.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn,
and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe.
Avemco Insurance Company has been passionate about aviation safety for over 60 years. That's why they sponsor the FAA's Fast Team Wings program and support I Learned About Flying from That. Avemco even rewards safe pilots with reduced premiums of up to 10%. You can instantly save 5% just for being a Flight Safety Detectives listener. Call 800-338-8705 today or visit avemco.com/flightsafety and tell them we sent you.